Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome, welcome one and all to the FSH Society Radio Show. I'm your host, Tim, and we're here again for another installment, another episode for you. This is episode 6 we're on, and we have a great featured guest tonight. It's the brand new president and CEO of the FSH Society, none other that is Mark Stone will be joining us today. That'll be 12 past the hour. He'll be dialing in, and we'll answer some great questions, not only the questions that I try to generate. I don't know if they're always great, but I try to spark some, good dialogue here. But we also have some great questions from some people chiming in on Facebook over the last couple of days, where I posed the question of what would you ask Mark Stone? And I'm like, go. And we got some nice responses from there as well. So we will have Mark field some of those questions. But it's not too late, because if you want to ask Mark some questions, feel free to do that. You can dial into the show. The number is 949-270-5953. Hit the old prompt if you want to get into the studio or onto the switchboard, and that would be just hitting the old number 1, I believe. And we'll put you right in there. And you can ask a question, have a little banter, a little conversation with us, and talk it out. Or if you don't want to just talk to Mark, you can just talk to me as well. Always welcome those calls, and love to hear what you have to say. I like starting up the conversations. I like trying to get something going, some dialogue going with all of you. This isn't just a show about me and myself dealing with FSH. It's about the other people out there that have it, the caregivers, the family members, the friends, all of that. And we want this to be a place where you can feel comfortable expressing anything you want to talk about in regards to this, or, well, a lot of things, I suppose. It's that safe place for you, for all of us. You can also stay anonymous. You don't have to say your name if you call in. I'm just going to announce who you are based on the last 4 digits of your phone number. That's it. You'll be, live right on air, and it's a lot of fun. Or you can chat room. We have that as well. That's another great tool to go ahead and contact me with some questions. We can share it with Mark right as we're talking with him as well, or any other guests we have in the future. The chat room is a great way to do that. You go to blogtalk.com, blogtalkradio.com, and when you're on our FSH Society page, you're listening to the show, you just link right into the chat room. So you're more than welcome to join us that way. I see one guest is in there. Welcome. Thanks for joining. And feel free to type in your questions there. Once again, it is anonymous. So if you don't want to, have your name attached, it's no problem. Also, I want to share these other contact things with you, too. You can always visit the website, fshsociety.org, at FSH Society on Twitter, Facebook. You can find us there as well. You can contact the show, FSH at fshsociety.org, or I believe now it could be info@fshsociety.org. Or you want to just email me directly. You just want to talk to me, Tim, recroomshow@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to field those emails as well. I can do what I can to try to answer those as we are on air. It's a little more difficult, but for you, I will do anything. So feel free if you have a question for me, you want to just talk to me directly, that's fine too. But during the show, after the show, whatnot, it's a lot of fun. So it's all about all of us. It's not just about me. So I hope you've had a great month. I hope you're ready for your trick-or-treating. I know ours is coming up this weekend. Kids are jacked up, pretty excited, even though the weather up here in the great state of Wisconsin is going to be typical Wisconsin late October weather with some 40 degrees and rain, but we will survive and they will have fun begging for candy, as I call it, house to house. We have that to look forward to. I also wanted to use this time, like I try to do, call it a monologue, call it peace of mind. I always like to use the term the bottom line, I guess, you know. And I kind of trolled, that's kind of a bad term. I looked through Facebook and some great FSH groups that I belong to on there. Fantastic, fantastic network of people on there. All of you that are involved in that, bravo, great job. Awesome place to go to just connect. It's just, I think that's the perfect word for it. I mean, this show is that as well. And if you want more of this show, we can bring it to you more than once a month, of course. You know, we can take that to a vote. Just, you know, flood June Kinoshita's email that you want more of this, and I'll be happy to bring more of this. But the FSH posts and groups on Facebook especially are really good. And there is this particular subject matter that came up October 19th, and actually it was posted pretty early in the morning, it looks like, 4:12 a.m., so this person types, and I'm going to leave names out of it because I don't know if they really like that, so we're not going to do that, even though, you know, you could probably go and find it yourself, I suppose, but, you know, that takes more work. But this is kind of the subject matter is, I guess I'll just rattle off what he said. I thought it was fantastic. It was a great viewpoint, vantage point of this. So something that has been on my mind for a while now, and I figure this may not be a bad place to throw it out there, says the writer on Facebook. As you may have assumed, I have FSHD. I also have a desire to love and be loved. I am curious as to how any of y'all's FSH has and continues to affect your pursuit of a healthy love life in a progressive relationship with someone. So I think that's the question. I mean, there's no question mark there, but I know that's what he's asking. He's asking, that to me is the base question. You know, you're in this situation, maybe you're single, or maybe you want to start a relationship, or maybe you just started one, you get your diagnosis. Now what? Yeah, that's pretty devastating news. You know, it's hard for people. Or let's say you're in a committed relationship already, or a long-term, you know, relationship, or a marriage, and you've been together for a number of years. And how does the person you're with? It's a massive curveball. And it's kind of forgotten, I guess, is kind of where my mind is, that there's somebody else on the other side of this. There's the flip side, the other side of the coin, where you have the person that has the disease, you have the person that has FSHD, and then you have the person that is living with them with it. And to me, I looked at my wife. I'm married, have been for 14 years, and we have two boys. And of course, thinking of all of that, all those aspects of it for me personally, and I know I'm not alone. You know, I know there's other people in my situation. I'm not ignorant to think that. And I couldn't help but think of, you know, how are all of you, or I should say your significant others, or if you want to try, you know, what kind of advice do we give those that for us that are married or in a relationship that have this disease? You know, what advice do we give those people that are seeking a relationship? You know, what do you look for, or what are the things, or when do you bring it up, or is it obvious because, you know, you are disabled to some degree, where, you know, maybe you're in a wheelchair or whatnot, you know, how do you handle those situations? It's an interesting question. It just had so many layers to it, such a massive, you know, subject. He goes on to say, I am genuinely concerned for the well-being of how it's going to impact them emotionally, them being the significant other, of course, while they watch me and my quality of life continue to dissipate. They say, when it comes to physical attraction, there will most certainly come a time when my partner will certainly be able to do a heck of a lot better than me when it comes to compatibility. I'm aware that looks and aesthetics are not everything. Who I am and my person, that's what my partner knows and loves about me. However, not to be shallow, just simply honest, I believe a relationship must still have physical chemistry. The follow-up question I think he has listed in here is, what happens when the day comes when my physical ability becomes limited to the point where and able-bodied persons will be able to fulfill that aspect of the relationship where I cannot? Okay. This discussion could go in many directions, he says. Good point. So, of course, the onslaught of fantastic comments comes after. Great comments of you know, motivation, of, you know, they I don't want to say are shallow people if they walk out on you anyway, or they weren't good to keep, but that kind of, you know, hey, you know, if they can't handle it, then maybe that's okay. You know, kind of speech was being talked about. This person wrote in response, I'm single at 62 and don't think I will have any more relationships. I am wasting and in disbelief at what has happened to my body. I am embarrassed and what I look like as I get older. So that person's devastated by the physical side of what's happening. I agree with that because I can see that in myself. And me being a man, and I'm only 42, and I look at other friends or other guys, I compare myself constantly. I'm like, man, look at the chest on that guy. And thinking, I'll never have that. That's gone. You know, and I kind of crack a joke or cut the tension, you know, with that, you know, with like a joke or offhanded comment or something to kind of divert it, but it's still true. So I understand what that one says. Other great points. This person writes, this is a topic we all have to deal with. In fairness, how would we react if our partner had a severe stroke or got hit by a car? Will we stand by him or her? Shouldn't we expect the same of them? I mean, great point again. What if the roles are reversed? If you're in a marriage and you've taken a vow of marriage, to me, the sickness and in health, I don't know if a lot of people understand what that is. And maybe they think, well, yeah, if it happens, it happens. I mean, you know, that's like the flu or a bad cold or, you know, whatever. I'll stand by them. But then this happens, you know, FSH or cancer or, you know, we're talking a big hitter illness. And it can really knock the relationship down. It can. And there's no doubt it tests it. It tests it. So to me, it can be this. It can be something else. I've said it before a lot of times that it doesn't matter what your something is. Everybody has a something. So I'll kind of leave you with that right now. We'll talk a little bit more about it, I think, as the show. Maybe we have time at the end. You know, we always like to have news and notes at the end of the show, too. But I'm never afraid to go over our hour, as you know. And I think this is a great point. So if you guys want to chime in a little bit with the chat room or at the end of the show, maybe we can spend some time to, you know, field some calls if you're ever so comfortable and brave to do that. You know, to me, that is, it's just the underlying point is this. What do we do for our significant others? Or how do we attract a significant other in the current situation you're in? It's fantastic dialogue. I hope we can open that door and talk a little bit about that. But for now, I want to take our first break, and then we're going to switch gears and bring in our featured guest. So why don't we take our first break? When we come back, we'll bring in Mark Stone.
I never cared much for moonlit skies. I never winked back at fireflies. But now that the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning to see the light.
Hi, I'm Kelly O'Hara, here to support my good friend and consummate musician, Stephen Blyer, and the countless others who suffer from FSHD muscular dystrophy. FSHD, the most common form of muscular dystrophy, is a lifelong progressive loss of all skeletal muscles.
I have FSHD and I hope we find a cure soon so I can be stronger and faster. Give with your whole heart so they can find a cure real soon.
But now that the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. Another episode, another month in, and happy October to you all, and maybe early happy Halloween to you all. Very excited to have our featured guest on. He's has a great new role with the FSH Society. He is Mark Stone, the new president and CEO of the FSH Society, and we welcome him here today to a little bit talk about himself and his new role with the society. Welcome, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. I think it's fantastic that you can join us, kind of give us a little bit of insight of how exciting it is that you have this new role with the FSH Society, maybe things you have in store and all that. We actually, I posted some Facebook requests out there for any listeners that, hey, if you got any questions for Mark, you know, shoot them our way. Let's do like a preemptive, you know, strike on getting some questions in. So we got some of those maybe that you can field too. So
sounds great.
No pressure. Don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, this is hopefully this will be a lot of fun. I think when I bring in a guest, I just love to kind of get people rooted in about the guest and kind of rewind the tape, so to speak, and kind of go from the beginning. So Mark, kind of what got you? You've been involved with a lot of nonprofits. You're a pastor. Why was that? Where was that calling started for you in your life to do this kind of work?
You know, it's interesting. I've had two or perhaps you could even call it three different types of careers. Really in my teenage years, I felt called into ministry and began to prepare that way, going to, college, seminary, et cetera, and began to pastor. And mm-hmm. as churches changed and as churches continued to grow and as I continued to grow, began to realize as you look in your rearview mirror and you begin to analyze some things, that really my personal passion, the reason I'm on the planet, is to help individuals and organizations achieve their greatest potential. That sounds, because it rolls off my tongue, it sounds like a, a trite almost mission statement that but really, there's a whole lot more depth and decades of activity and behind that. I realized very quickly that I was a capacity builder. I was built for growth. I was built to move individuals toward their highest and best purpose, and to move the organizations toward their highest and best purpose, and that I could function in a leadership role in those organizations that really wanted to move and accomplish something great, something that really they never had thought in mind. And so for 19 or 20 years, I was a pastor the last 8 or 9 years of very large churches, which is a leadership challenge in and of itself, probably one of the toughest you can almost have. Transition from there into our global compassionate ministry. So a relief and development organization where I had a role that was, while it wasn't titled this, it was an assistant director, the associate or assistant director of our global compassionate ministries for our denomination. We were in 150 countries of the world, and if something blew up from a disaster response standpoint, we were usually there. So I traveled the world for 3 or 4 years. That mm-hmm. was an experience. My world got bigger then. It was more than a local, just a little local work. Suddenly, mm-hmm. and it was interesting that my boss's boss one time said, Mark, once your world gets bigger, you will never be satisfied with a local assignment. And wow. He was absolutely right. Yeah. So then began to transition from there into the work I'm at now, which is patient advocacy, really research-focused patient advocacy. And almost every place I've gone, they've had kind of a regional operation with either national or global reach, and I've been able to build capacity around the staff and the organization and the volunteers and the people to go from a regional operation to a national operation and even a global operation in order to accomplish the mission.
And how quickly were you able to do that for those organizations, give it that kind of growth?
In one organization, 3 years, we went from $5 million to $11 million. We grew a volunteer base of strong volunteer-led, what I call volunteer-led, staff-fed chapters around America. We had an infrastructure, but we really began to maximize that infrastructure. And more importantly than all the money and all the growth, because we were a research-focused advocacy group, much like the FSH Society is, we began to transition from just funding basic research. There's really three categories of research, and I'm oversimplifying, but there's basic, there's translational, and there's clinical. And, of course, that's where you have clinical trials and FDA approval and ultimately therapies that will modify a disease or fix it. We began to transition from just funding basic research, young investors, young investigators, to moving more toward the clinic, more toward therapeutic development. There's things that they can analyze compounds very, very quickly through either mouse models or through some kind of cell lines. And if some of those begin to hit as being effective, then we move those compounds forward. And what we did, what we were able to do, is begin to expedite, fill the drug development pipeline and expedite treatments and cures. In another area, we went from, in a couple of years, we went from about 2 million to 4 million, 4.5 million. We actually rolled out a first ever in-class clinical trial network of about 30 to 35 sites and actually began to sign contracts with pharmaceuticals to actually do trials through these networks, which then again expedited treatments and cures to our families.
Wow. So would this all be what I saw was in quotations and a little bit of the bio was the army of activists that you seem to have a good way of raising?
Well, let's picture an effective organization from a functional standpoint as a railroad track. So you have two tracks. You have one track that, let me put it this way, that one track is our track to accelerate research toward treatments and cures. Not to fund research for research sake, not even necessarily to fund for discoveries, although that's important, but to begin to move that research toward treatments and a cure. The second track is to engage, educate, and empower an active community, an active constituency, because an empowered community is about the only thing that has ever moved the needle further, faster. You look back the last time, and really the only time we went from no drugs and a deadly disease in 8 years, they had drugs that kept the person alive for the rest of their natural life, was in HIV/AIDS. And they did two things. They created what someone called collective intent. It was the fusion of thought that comes from a shared sense of urgency. There was an urgency all over the globe and all over the planet. Researchers put down their silos and began to cross-collaborate. And I think the patient advocacy group, the active patient advocacy group, is the honest broker that can allow that to happen. We can fund that to happen. We can get them around the same table, and we can have them collaborate. And the second thing that made the difference, and only the second thing that made the difference, was the patient advocate. Suddenly, those people began to come out of the closet, regardless of your moral bent, they began to come out of the closet, and they began to say, we are dying as a community, and we're not going to take it any longer. We're going to have our voices heard. And I like to picture a football stadium where everybody is talking their own, they're just having conversation, and it's just a big roar, just a big din. But you let them stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, or you let them speak in unison, and suddenly you have one voice 50,000 strong, and that voice can be heard. And that's really where the genesis of it comes. And yes, building an army of activists and active community and active caring community is absolutely essential to getting the job done.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It was definitely, even though it's a short series of words put together, you know, the army of advocacies, but it was motivating. It's empowering. When you speak in that term of an army, you know, it's like you're thinking it's tough. You're thinking it's purposeful. It has a mission. It's unified. And it's, you know, it's so motivated. Have you ever been a motivated or a motivational speaker? Or are you one just based on what you do?
Just that's a part of my DNA. Some people
right.
say I speak in exclamation points. I have to watch when I write letters because at the end of every sentence I want to put an exclamation point in. I said to the FSH society staff, which I have no idea what they think of me. Sometimes they laugh and think, "What a corn cob!" But you know, I said, "Listen, if I can't get people ignited, I'm going to set myself on fire and they can warm up at the blaze." and that's really where it's at.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard that kind of phrase like that. But it's a good visual. You know, I mean, I understand what you're trying to say, you know, because that's exactly the sense I got because we've never spoken before. This is the first time.
Right.
And that's the immediate sense I got from you, that I received this motivational push through my headphones. Like, whoa, this guy is got energy for sure and directed in the right direction, as it seems like you have done that very well. You can easily get this army moving in the right place. So I think that's quite an honor to have you aboard on this.
Well, and when you think of an army, and I tell this story often. As a matter of fact, it just popped into my mind when I first became the chief operating officer of a patient advocacy group, and I was asked to speak to the staff. And I had always been in ministry, and this was a secular job. And you know, I thought, I don't know what to say, but if you ask a preacher to speak, he's going to speak. And so, you know, I was standing there and I looked at the group and I said, you know, the Army Rangers have a motto. They have a theme. It's blazoned in them in training camp and they live and die by it. And it's simply this: we go in together, we work together, we play together, we fight together, and we come out together. And if we don't come out together, well, we just don't come out at all. And I said, what kind of an organization would this be if we all lived by that principle? I mean, let's just say we're taking a 20-mile slog figuratively. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah.
But you've got
right.
your legs under you, but your partner doesn't. And he comes and you pick up a side of his pack and another guy picks up the side of his pack and we come across the line together that day, that way. I said, I think that would be a great organization. I think that would be an organization where I could come and bring my highest and best and put it in the middle of the table with others doing the exact same thing, and we could accomplish that which the world would look on in amazement at. That's the kind of organization I want to be a part of. What about you?
Right.
And that's really the story, if you will, of the culture that I've been privileged to work in and sometimes to create. It wasn't there mm-hmm. when I got there, but that camaraderie, that principle of community, principle of trust, and an effective leadership environment, everybody focused on the same role and job and are focused on the same mission with various roles and jobs, and a kind of an interdependence that we really do need each other, and we are best when we are doing it together.
Now, I know you've only had this role just through September of working with the FSH Society as a CEO and president. So, but what are some of the, I guess, early goals that you can see that you want to work on?
Well, I think we need, we've done a whole lot of good things over time. And like most patient advocacy groups, research-focused patient advocacy groups, we started out by gathering a few caring people who wanted to make a difference. And they began to fund research, and they began to advocate on Capitol Hill for more money for research, and they began to grow the research field, to grow awareness. The FSH Society under Dan Perez and great key volunteers that have been with him the whole time, we now have, I asked one pharmaceutical, what is the one main research conference in our space that I need to go to globally? They said, well, it's the International Research Conference that the society puts on. That is the premier one.
Mm-hmm.
Great. That was awesome to hear. So, you know, that's great. But now it's time, I think, to move into what do we need to bridge the gap between key research and those therapeutic models and those therapies and the clinical trials that are ultimately going to go through and get FDA approval and absolutely be a disease-modifying, life-changing therapy for our families. And we need to do that. There is a in my short time here, I've met with probably 125 to 150 families. I've met with six pharmaceutical companies. I've met with about 10 docs, almost all of our board members. And there has inside me been planted a sense of urgency because of the human need, the human condition. And, you know, it's easy in the FSH community. They are easy to adopt, and I have been adopted easily. And so now I have it in my family, my adopted family. And, you know, there is a growing impatience about the pace. And while we need to be smart about it, we need to invest well. We need to stay away from snake oil salesmen.
Right.
But through good science and research rigor, I believe we can get into the therapeutic development, and move it further faster. I also believe, and this is in the raising an army of activists, and that twin tracks, that we need to launch some type of a, and we just talked about it in one of our committee meetings today on the phone, but we need to launch and are planning to launch a, for lack of a better term, maybe a chapter movement. I don't want to get too far ahead of my board and us talking about it and us funding it. You understand that?
Right.
So this is me talking right now. I'll put a little asterisk by that, where we can have a local presence while we're having a global impact. It's interesting that Dan Perez, our co-founder and former CEO, who's now our chief science officer, I've heard over and over about his mother and the social work, quote unquote, that she did among those families. Mm-hmm. And I just think if we magnify that spirit out 10, 20, 30 times in local areas, we can have small little local FSH societies in a local area, loving, embracing, empowering, and engaging a growing community of activists.
Wow.
So it's those two primary things.
Yeah. That sounds great. That's a fantastic idea. And I do understand the asterisks. I understand. Yeah, that it's obviously still an early process. So yeah, absolutely. I definitely wanted to share some of the questions that we received via Facebook of, you know, what they wanted to ask you. And all I did was pose the question of, you know, Mark Stone's going to be our featured guest on the show. What would you ask him since he's the new president and CEO of the FSH Society? What would you ask him? And I just said, go. And then thought, let's just see what we get. So we have two people have questions. They're both actually from the UK, so across the big pond. And one, her name is Sue, and she's asking, with limited funds, what what do you see as a priority in research or making lives better for those already affected?
That's a very good point. Again, I do think that the volunteer infrastructure can help a long, long way with that. I also think partnering with innovative companies in the mobility space that literally helps them navigate their life better, live their life a little more full, a little more unrestricted because of mobility aids and mobility devices, especially the cutting edge ones that are coming out here of late. Someone even suggested to me that, you know, it would be great to have something in artificial intelligence begin to be created for our families and for our community. So again, we are a research focused patient advocacy group, and I don't want disease to progress anymore. And I even want to try to figure out a way with very smart people all around us how to even reverse that. And yes, that might be my Everest that is very tall and very imposing. But I'm going to keep looking at that mountain because it can't grow any bigger, but I can, and we can. That said, I do realize, and I do know, and my heart is heavy already for our constituents that are, you know, have those daily challenges. One lady, one young lady actually said to me, you know, somebody asked me, you know, do I work outside the home? And they don't understand that getting out of bed is work for me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, wow, let that settle in.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, my perspective has changed there. Again, what can we fund? What can we do from a funding or a creation standpoint? Probably not a whole lot, but there are a whole lot of companies that can do that. And we can engage and we can partner and we can get them at the table and catalyze their development.
Now, another question here from the UK, from Joy. Now, I don't know if you can answer this one or not. Joy seems a little frustrated because she's asking, why does it take so long to get a diagnosis of FSH? So I don't know if that's out of your realm, but it's a question I figured throw it at you.
Well, thanks, and I think with a few more months and a few more miles under my belt, I'll be able to give a layman's answer to that.
That's a good answer.
You know, there are difficulties in determining what it is because it's my understanding of the disease is it doesn't always manifest the same way in everybody. Right. And so unless you're a specialist in both muscle and or and certainly in FSHD, which there's not many specialists in FSHD, sometimes it's misdiagnosed and it's hard to diagnose. And you just think, well, you know, you need to strengthen your legs because you have foot drop or something to that effect.
Yeah.
That's as close as I can get right now. But it is difficult,
that's a good effort. Yeah.
And we are working. Yeah, we thanks. We are working with doctors to try to equip and educate them to be more to look for those things. Interestingly enough, we don't even know. I understand that, and it's no slight against the MDA, the organization. But there's no way to even tell how many have been diagnosed with FSH because there was no codes in our in our computer processes in clinics and in hospitals. And through the effort, again, of Dan Perez and some others, we're getting very, very close to having a code so that we will actually be able to diagnose and to our FSH patients. So that will help in bringing an awareness about it to the clinic.
One more Facebook listener question. This is from Jimmy in Phoenix, Arizona. He asks, any experimental or cutting-edge treatments that you are a part of or aware of that could take cures one step closer to fruition?
You know, there are three clinical trials companies working in our space that are doing actually different things. So picture this problem being surrounded or being attacked from different sides and different angles. There's one company that has a compound and they're in clinical trials that's looking to tamp down the inflammation response. Most of our body's maladies are caused by inflammation, so the theory goes. I'm not sure it's a theory. It might be a fact. But they're thinking that if they can tamp down that inflammation response, that actually they can halt or slow down or even stop the progression of the disease. And so they're in a clinical trial. That's pretty innovative. There's another pharmaceutical company that I sat with, and they actually inject their drug into the affected muscle. So it's not systemic, so it doesn't go in the body and it doesn't impact the whole body. But the affected muscle actually, and of course they show pictures of a rat model and all that, and they did one leg and not the other leg, and the one leg looked like a great big giant muscle, and the other leg, is atrophy.
Wow.
So it obviously works in mouse models. They're testing it in humans. That could be taken to the exact affected muscle. And there's some other research that's actually and I'm assuming most of your listeners know about the gene that was found, the DUX4, DUX4 gene. Yeah. And they're actually going in and they're trying to downregulate the DUX4. So if you shut it off, then the theory is that, the hypothesis is that it will fix the problem. It will literally fix the problem. So what I keep hearing from researchers, and if you know researchers at all, you know that they're very cautious. One or two of them will, make bold statements. But as a group, they're very cautious about bold statements and false promises. But I keep hearing over and over the term tipping point. The research that the FSH Society and other groups globally have funded and have pushed and have moved the research, the knowledge base forward to a point where now we're at a tipping point where many of those discoveries and those research findings and the knowledge base can be translated into the clinic. There's one researcher, and I'm actually going to meet with him tomorrow, that he was giving a slide presentation, and he pointed out, 7 to 10, and he said, these are druggable targets, meaning these are targets that companies or biotechs can come in, and they can fasten or formulate a small molecule or a drug to and actually change or alter some of the damage of the disease. So we have come a long way in a short amount of time. And I think that snowball is just going to continue to pick up speed.
That to me is good hope. That's good news. And the fact that there's three different things happening there is a great sign. So I appreciate just taking the time today, Mark, joining us, fielding those questions on Facebook, putting you on the spot and handling it so well. Thank you very much for that as well. We hope we can have you on again very soon.
You bet. I appreciate it, Tim. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
So that is Mark Stone. He is the new president, CEO of the FSH Society. And it was great to have him on. Definitely a motivator. Holy cow. I feel like I could get up and run a mile. I mean, it's good news. It's good news. I think they got the right person for the job there. Why don't we take another quick break? When we come back, we're gonna bring in some news and notes with Beth Johnston. She's the Chief Community Development Officer, and she's going to join us. June could not be here this evening, so Beth is stepping in and helping us out and letting us know what's going on out there in the FSH Society world. But first, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll bring in Beth. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD, and share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Back to the show, listening to FSH Society Radio, and we just had in the new president and CEO of the FSH Society, Mark Stone. Happy he could join us, motivate us, let us also know what's going on and what his goals are. And we had some great questions from the listeners through Facebook. Kind of started those questions coming a little earlier this week, and they were great. Had some great responses. So now I want to change gears a little bit and bring in Beth Johnson. She is the Chief Community Development Officer, and she's stepping in for us for June Kinoshita, who is usually the person that does kind of the news and notes and what's going on in FSH Society. But Beth's taking the wheel at that job for us today, so we welcome in Beth right now. Hello, Beth.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you. I'll tell you what, Mark's a tough act to follow, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I felt pretty small sitting over here. I was like, you know, maybe I'll just step out and just let him just roll because, man, I mean, he's a motivator, I'll tell you.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, being part of the staff that he's talking about, it's exactly what he's described, and exactly what you hear tonight is exactly how he runs his staff meetings and how he's running the show, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have him on board. So, you just got a piece of it tonight, but, you know, we live it every day. So it's
wow.
A wonderful, wonderful thing. And the positivity and, you know, the moving forward and taking things to greater heights is, he's not kidding. It's all real. So we're pretty excited.
Yeah, what a nice place to, yeah, that's great.
I know, right? I know. It is. So I just want to give you a quick update on what's coming up in FSH Society land. You spat out my new long, shiny title, the Chief Community Development Officer, and Mark kind of alluded to, you know, what's coming down the road as far as chapter development, and that's kind of what my role is going to be in 2018 and 2019 is developing these chapters across the country. So, again, with the asterisk next to it, we haven't got board approval yet, but we're pretty excited about what's coming down the pike in the next couple of years. So everyone out there, you'll be getting a phone call from me. we're still kind of shining. We're glowing a bit from this meeting that we had last weekend. One of our community members, Lori Heyman, organized a conference in Los Angeles last weekend that was just amazing. We brought together patients and researchers and clinicians, and we had about a half day's worth of presentations and just community involvement, and that was just an amazing event. And we'd like to, next year we plan to have many of those across the country as well, and in more places. So, you know, look for that to come in 2018 for sure.
Nice.
let me just coming up in November and December so everyone can kind of mark their calendars.
Okay.
On November the 2nd, we've got, in Connecticut, we've got a meeting with Dr. Larry Hayward. He actually co-directs the FSHD clinic at the University of Mass Medical School. And I live in Colorado, and I'm going to butcher this name. I call it Worcester, but I think in Massachusetts they call it Worcester.
Worcester.
University of
okay.
Massachusetts in Worcester. So all the New Englanders are going to call me, and they're going to yell at me later. But Dr. Larry Hayward, he's going to be visiting the Connecticut meeting on November the 2nd. And for just let me preface this, on our events calendar on our website, fshsociety.org, you will find locations, times, directions to all of these meetings that I'm mentioning tonight. So if you're in the locale, just mark your calendar and then go on our website to get all the details. November 4th, I'm actually going to be in New York City for this meeting. We've got a couple of clinicians from the MDA clinic at Columbia that's going to visit our meeting in New York City. And, I will be there as well. We're going to send off our hero, Jeff Bellow, who is running the New York City Marathon to raise money for the FSH Society,
nice.
And he'll be running that on Sunday. So we'll have a little send-off party for him on November the 4th. Bunch of stuff happening on November 4th. Chicago Northwest Medicine, hosted by one of the doctors there, one of the neuromuscular doctors at Northwestern, they're going to have a special guest there, Dr. Susan Keeshan. I hope I'm saying her name right. That'll be just a great event for the folks there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Also on November the 4th in Dallas at the University of Texas Southwest Medical Center, Drs. Woody Wright and Dr. Mark Goldberg, they're in the neurology and neurotherapeutics.
Nice.
Yes, that's a tough one. It doesn't roll off the tongue, but they will be, they're hosting a meeting there at the University of Texas Southwest Medical Center on November the 4th. And actually, June and Mark, who you just heard from, will be there as well.
Mm.
So all of them will be getting the information
nice.
Firsthand. Right. Then June and Mark are going to head over to Austin right after that. So on November the 5th in Austin, we have a patient and clinical psychologist by the name of Dr. David Younger, who's also a personal friend of mine, who I love. He has FSH, and he is going to host the session in Austin, Texas on November the 5th. One of our board members and also patient, Amy Beckier, will be hosting a meeting in San Diego on November the 18th. She will have a clinician with her by the name of Dr. Carla Grossman, who I just met last weekend. She's a fantastic human as well as, interested in FSH. So we got to love these people. That's November the 18th in San Diego. December the 2nd, Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. Okay, some of these aren't on our calendar yet on our website, but if you're in the area, I'd just like for you to mark your calendar. December the 2nd will be in Minneapolis. This is a big one. We're going to be visiting the lab of Dr. Michael Kaiba. He does these things to mice that Mark was just talking about where, these poor little mice, they're being injected with all this stuff to figure out how to stop DUX4 and all this. He's actually developed skeletal muscle in mice that looks a lot like FSHD in humans. And this is kind of, I know it's hard to explain, but he's done it. And this is what we need to continue research and to get it into human trials. So if you're in Minneapolis area on December the 2nd, mark your calendar. It will be on our website soon. We just need to get all the deets and then we'll put it out there. But we're going to be visiting Dr. Kaiba's lab, which is going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it looks like there's article.
So
it looks like there's an article about that, Michael Kaiba, on the FSHSociety.org. So those that want to do a little preemptive reading before they try to visit that event, it's titled A New DUX4 Mouse with Muscle Disease. And, it looks like it gets right into the detail of that. So that's fantastic that they can meet him and be more involved with what's going on. That's fantastic.
Totally. And I feel like when these people who are doing this work in a lab, in a petri dish, or on a mouse, see firsthand that it's actually going to help, that it just motivates them even more to get the work done. So, it's all good. And even, you know, when these doctors and clinicians come to these meetings, honestly, when they see a community ready to participate and be involved, it just gets them more excited to help us. So any of these meetings that anybody can attend where there's people here that you can get their ear and talk to how important their work is to you as a human, to you as a family, then it goes that much further inside the lab.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah. I just got a couple of more. I don't know how much time we have, but a few more things in December that I want to have people mark their calendar. Okay. December the 5th, we're going to be in Sacramento. Dr. Lisa Williams from the UC Davis Medical Center, she's been involved with that Acceleron trial. And Mark didn't actually mention names of which trial was which, but this is the trial where they're actually injecting specific muscle to basically give it more strength. And so she is one of the trial sites for Acceleron, and she will be at the meeting on December the 5th in Sacramento, and she'll be able to answer all the questions about the Acceleron trial. A couple ones that not yet on our website, but just please mark your calendar. December the 9th will be in Baltimore, and we plan to visit the University of Maryland Medical School, the lab of Dr. Dalblock. He developed something called the Frankenmouse, where this mouse's leg muscle has been replaced by human FSHD muscle. So again, just so cool that we've come this far that we can actually perform these kind of tests to further it. Right.
Wow.
I don't even think I want to see what this Frankenmouse looks like, but I'm sure it's pretty.
Well, it is the season for Frankenmouse, so yeah.
It is. Oh, that's funny. Okay, last but not least, again, mark your calendar, December the 16th in Grand Rapids, Michigan. A genetic counselor is going to be there by the name of Laura Saplee, and June, I think, is planning to be there. Genetic counseling is a big kind of a black cloud for people. You know, do I get tested? Do I not get tested? Do I test my kids? It's a big area of a lot of concern for a lot of patients and their families. So if you're in the Michigan, the Grand Rapids area around December 16th, it would really be a great thing to attend. And these genetic counselors are just amazing. They just have a good demeanor, and they know how to answer questions, and you know, there's a lot of emotion and feeling involved in getting a genetic diagnosis. So it's always good to have a genetic counselor close by when indeed you do get tested or have somebody in your family tested. So
yeah, absolutely. That's a good. It's a lot of information you just packed in a short amount of time there. That's good work.
I'm out of breath.
Got to have a big glass of water now.
I think so.
Well, thanks for giving us all the news and notes and the happenings and what's going on. You know, how come we haven't had you on as a featured guest yet, Beth?
Well, it's funny. I think June's been trying to get me on the show many times, but you know, I've got two teenage kids, and this time of night we're usually running from activity to activity. And,
right.
You know, volleyball and karate and basketball. So, but tonight we had a night off. So I love this. I love you and what you're doing for us.
Oh,
and
nice.
And so my family is also affected by FSH. I don't know if I prefaced this with that. And so this is part of my heart and soul. And you know, I'm going to work myself out of a job. And I'm hoping that in my lifetime I will no longer have to be working here because we will have a cure.
Absolutely.
So that's
Amen.
That's my goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Excellent. Absolutely. Well, thanks again for joining us, and we will work on your schedule. We will definitely get you on. I think your personality just beams through. I think you'd be a blast to talk with more details. So thanks again though for filling in for June tonight. And hopefully we can get you on that featured guest role one time.
Oh, no. Okay. Sounds awesome.
All right. Take care. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Tim. And you take care, and look forward to chat with you again.
Absolutely. So that is Beth Johnston. She or her title there is the Chief Community Development Officer, or the CCDO, I guess we could call her, right? And she is working very hard, it sounds, to start, you know, asterisk is there about building those charters up. But that, to me, is very exciting news to hear. Without a doubt, I really enjoyed today's show. I had some great guests, great personalities on here. It's going to be tough for me to kind of relax the rest of the night. These are some motivational people that we had on with Mark and Beth. I mean, even with the news, she got a lot of information in for us. And if you missed any of it or want to know more about it, go to fshsociety.org. It's all there for you. I was browsing along as she was saying the things. A lot of the things are posted. They constantly add those dates on there for us and you know, let us know when certain events are coming and what's coming in your area. I think to me that is, you know, really, you know, it's just kind of good that you can reach out to people, and it's good that you can you know, kind of engage with the community, and you can find a local group to go to. When she mentioned the meeting happening in Chicago, that's definitely in my neck of the woods over here, so I'll try to check that out. So visit all those things at fshsociety.org. It's that time of night. We're going to wrap up the show, and next month we're working on getting that featured guest for you, so stay tuned, and we'll post that on all the social media and email blasts of when we have that guest book, so stay tuned for that. A special thank you to Mark Stone, the president and CEO of the FSH Society, for joining us tonight. Also a special thank you to Beth Johnston, the Chief Community Development Officer of the FSH Society, for giving us the news, the notes. Fantastic people, great motivation. I hope you're all motivated as well. We will continue the conversation, I think, next show, a little bit about the caregiver side, the little monologue we did in the beginning of the show where we talked about, you know, finding the right partner. How does this affect your partner in your life? I think it's an interesting dialogue. We'll continue that on Facebook as well. And thank you all for listening. Thanks for being a part of this show. I love doing it every month. And reach out to me if you want to. recroomshow@gmail.com is my email address. info@fshsociety.org or fsh@fshsociety.org are the emails. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @FSH Society. Thank you all, and good night.